It's time now for Gina Gardner and Friends, the show that shares stories from inspiring people, from a wide range of expert guests, all focused on helping you live a happier, more successful, and fulfilling life. Gina Gardner is a multiple number one international best-selling author, motivational speaker, business coach, and trainer. She's the founder of Genuinely You and has over 30 years' experience of helping people step into their genuine, authentic power, personally and professionally.
Matthew.
Huh? Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I just need you to listen to me.
I know that a lot of times, Mom, it might not seem like I'm listening to you, but I am. I hear you. And what you say really does matter to me.
I mean, let's be honest. No kid likes rules, but I get why we have them. I hear you, and I know it's because you care.
All the talks we've had over the years, including what you've told me about not using alcohol and other drugs, they stick with me. And believe it or not, they really do make a difference, especially at times that matter most.
Hey, want a drink?
No thanks, I'm good. So thank you, Dad, for talking and preparing me for what's ahead.
Thanks, Mom, for never giving up and always being my biggest fan.
Thank you for letting me know what you expect, so I can try to meet your expectations.
Thank you for talking.
For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
And now, here's your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, and a huge welcome to this episode of Gina Gardner and Friends. Today, I'm joined by a spiritual teacher and counsellor. She is Kat Orme, and she does amazing work with helping people, as she calls it, get unstuck. Self-actualization through communication is our theme of our discussion today, and she's worked with many people, helping them to get unstuck. So, Kat, a huge welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, come on, what's the story? How do you get to be a spiritual counselor and a spiritual educator?
Well, how do I get to be?
Well, what's the story behind?
The story is this, I'm in a place now that's the natural evolution of my life from where I began, right? But am I at a place now where people come to me when they're stuck. That's what happens. That's where I am now, right? Those are the people who gravitate to me in the work that I do. They're stuck. They don't know how to move their lives forward. They don't know how to make connections with other people, or they want community and they don't know how to find it. So these are the people that I find myself working with. How did I get here? Following a similar path myself.
Okay. Do you want to give a bit more detail about that?
Sure, sure. I'm assuming you're asking me now for a brief bio of myself?
Rather than a bio, just a little of your backstory so people know how you are now helping other people. And I'm assuming that some of that's based on your own experience.
So the important points, I think, of my backstory are I lost my mother at a very early age. And so my understanding of grief and loss is profound, and it formulary in a way in terms of who I am in the world. My mother was diagnosed when I was 7 with cancer, and then became sort of a spokesperson for the time that she was sick, for what it meant to have cancer, what it meant to be terminally ill, in the day and time where people told the patient that they were gonna survive, and they told the spouse to go home and be prepared for their death. Like, that was the best medicine had to offer in those days. So she became a poster child, a spokesperson for, no, that's not how we want to be treated. No, if you tell me that I have a terminal illness, I'm not going to just lay down and die. It gives me choices. And so we did a lot of work, even as children, with my mother around. And so when I came out the other side of it, all through my life, I have always, people who have experienced loss have always gravitated to me because I have things to offer. Like, you talked earlier when we spoke the last time about wanting to give people things to take away from the show.
Absolutely.
One of the things that off the top I will suggest to anyone who's experiencing loss, particularly significant losses, a parent, a child, a caregiver that was really fundamental, is to relax and slow down. You will have the rest of your life to be without your mother, your spouse, your child, your dad. People come in our culture in particular, in the American culture, we come into it with an idea that we should hurry up. We should hurry up and grieve. We should get through it. We should get to a place where in a year or two, we're able to tell people, oh, you did it. Great. You've moved on. And, you know, my experience at that young age was I didn't move on. My father remarried right away. My sister attached herself to the new person, the new mom, and I did none of those things. And 2 years later, I was still as lost in my grief as I had ever been. Only everyone around me was like, honey, why haven't you gotten, you should be over this by now. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't. I'd had no support in those days. I had no idea what to do. What I know now is you don't have to be in a hurry, right? Grief has its ups and downs, it ebbs and flows, and it becomes a part of who you are. And it's okay, right? That's the message we don't get, is that it's okay to grieve, to be angry, to be sad, to not want to get out of bed some days. And that's part of grieving. And it's okay.
You know, it's really interesting. And thank you very much for that, because I think for so many people going through grief, they're dealing not only with their own grief, but the attitudes that other people show to them. So things such as they'll cross on the other side of the road rather than speak to you because they don't quite know what to say. Or they'll brush over the grief. I can remember a friend of mine being very, very upset when her father died. And she was a teacher. She went back to school and she'd been out for about 10 days, I think, between the death and the funeral. And when she went back, nobody mentioned it. It was as if nothing had happened. And I think that just compounded the grief, because it was a sense that I should be doing something different to how I'm doing. And she struggled with that.
Yes. This is a phenomenon, I think, that exists. I'm recently encountering it in a totally different area of life, which is dealing with issues of race and minority, right? And homelessness and people who are in these marginalized places in our society, right? Yeah. And I think people with significant grief are also in a marginalized place in our society. And part of what's the most difficult is when others treat us like we don't exist. Yeah. Or treat people like they're not homeless or a person of color or a person of a different sexual orientation or gender identification, right? So we just... anything that's outside of the quote unquote norm, people want to act like isn't really happening.
Yes.
Right. And it's the quickest way to say to someone, I don't see you.
You know, it's an interesting one, because I think we often, generally speaking, when people are talking about grief, they talk about bereavement, that somebody has died and that they are grieving the loss of that person in their lives. But I think grief comes in so many forms. So, for example, when people are made redundant, they often will go through a grieving process of who am I when I'm not being that particular job. And, you know, you've talked about homeless or people who don't fit into a particular category that other people see as being their norm. And of course, their norm is only their norm. Everybody has their blueprint of what norm looks like, and it's very different for each of us. And I think that, you know, being aware that just because it's not the norm for you doesn't make it the norm for somebody else is so important. And instead of ignoring it, walking on the other side of the road, just saying, how are you doing? And being ready to listen rather than how are you, and assuming okay is the stock answer and I don't want anything else but okay, yeah. I think is such a powerful way of helping people.
Yeah. And that brings us back to what it is that I do, right? Everybody that I work with, whether it's one-on-one counseling or in the education experiences that we have and run, it all starts with listening.
Yeah.
It all starts with, I listen. And when I say listen, I mean an open heart type of listening, where I listen not for what I'm going to say. I'm listening not to judge or figure anything out, but I'm just listening to hear whoever that you are.
That is such a gift. And if everybody employed that gift, I often say to people, you know, you've got 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. You know, if you listen twice as much as you talk, then I think life would be very different. We've got to go for a short break now, but I want to explore when we come back this issue of managing other people's expectations and how challenging that can be. And perhaps you've got some advice to give people. So please don't go away.
The IRS called and sent me an email requesting payment. Is this a scam?
Scammers often impersonate IRS employees by calling, emailing, or even texting you in attempts to steal your money or personal information. It is a scam. Do not respond. IRS scammers continue to be a serious threat to the public and have claimed victims in every state, and now have evolved to include pandemic-related scams. Scammers may be combative and threatening in order to bully you into sending them money immediately. The IRS always initiates communications by mail first and will never threaten to arrest or deport you or demand your personal information. The IRS does not request payment by phone, text, email, or gift cards. Protect yourself. Just hang up or delete the message. If you suspect you've been contacted by a scammer, submit an incident report to the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration at tips.tigda.gov. You can also call their TIGTA hotline at 1-800-366-4484.
What is it, Julia? Why are you so excited, honey? Hey, do you want to use your talker?
With Julia's autism, using a talker can help her find the words she wants to say.
My God.
You want to do something with Rose, Julia?
Play ball.
Do you want to play catch with Rose? I think Rose is excited to play catch, too. Oh, Julia, you show us so many different ways to talk together. And play. Good catch, Rose. Okay, give Julia the ball. There you go. Okay, throw the ball, Julia.
For Julia's family, early screening for autism made a lifetime of difference. Find out more at screenforautism.org.
Okay, Julia, there you go. Whoa, another good throw. That's the way.
Welcome back. Before the break, Kat Baum and I were talking about grief and how it affects people and how not being seen or heard, and we were talking specifically about listening, is so difficult if we don't fit the person who we're talking to's boxes. And so we feel outside, we feel as if we are not being valued. And I know you spend a lot of time helping people find a way forward, to create some momentum in their life rather than being stuck.
Yes.
I'm interested, do you find that very often people are feel bound, almost caged by other people's expectations of how they should behave?
I think that's some of it. I think when I think of the people that I've worked with, a lot of what it is the cages that we construct ourselves.
I think we're good at that too.
I work with people who have trauma in their backgrounds, and they've come out of those experiences with coping skills, the kinds of coping skills that helped them survive when they were there, but no longer serve them. So some of the experience is really hearing and listening to the pain and listening to all of the disappointment that they've had and all of the trauma that they've experienced, and then walking up to how is your coping mechanisms from then actually impeding your progress now, and what can you do, what can you engage in to move forward. And some of it is just in the conversations that ensue from active listening. Is just a peeling back of layers, a peeling back of creating. I worked with one person, a client once, who I literally went and spent a week with them. You know, my work is not really that well done by come and sit with me 45 minutes for once a week. I do a little bit more hands-on. So I spent a week with them, and after some conversation, a lot of it's intuitive on my part. What we needed to do is I sat down with a notebook and I started with, okay, so tell me, you were born. And he spent 3 days telling me his story chronologically, all of the aspects of what was going on as a way of understanding the things that he had come with as his issues. He was having difficulty with a partner. His partner was having difficulty with drug addiction and trying to recover from that and not doing very well. And so these were the issues. And then there were some health issues and some parent dying issues. And they didn't know how to fix them or move past them. They just knew they were caught up in them.
Yes.
So when we sat and we went through his life chronologically, his own story began to make sense to him.
Yes.
Right. In a way that it hadn't when he was just looking at all the pieces alone in his head, you know, by creating space for all of it to come out,
yeah,
like dump it all out in the space between us and sort through it. And then ultimately the work that I do leads people back to, when I say spiritual, it's because I don't really fix anybody. Right. I believe that the power in the universe, God, great spirit, universe, karma, whatever is your sense of a power that's greater than you.
Yep.
What does the healing? We just need to put ourselves in a position to avail ourselves of that power. So usually there's a certain degree of self-awareness. There's a certain degree of humility. There's a certain degree of connectedness with ourselves and our others that create a connectedness with the universe. And then that is the entity, that's the spirit, the energy that comes in and does the healing. You know, just have to make ourselves available.
Yeah. For me, I think that so much is about how we interact with ourselves and the stories that we make up. And I think, you know, what you describe is an opportunity to actually unpick the events and to speak those events to somebody else in a way that doesn't get caught up in the stories that we make up ourselves about what's happened and why. And usually there's at least an element of that we've done it wrong and we should have done this or we shouldn't have done that. And if only we, you know, behaved in a different way, we'd have a different life. Whereas you can, when you take away the story and the emotional charge, then you have the opportunity to look at it in a very different way and in a more resourced way. And having somebody there hold the space for you, which I think is what you do so wonderfully, is that you're giving people permission to let go and be in that safe space and to explore, but knowing they're not going to get lost in the story.
Yeah.
Because you're going to act as a guide to help them find their way through. And I think it's really magical.
Thank you. I agree. Because I like when in the educational intensives that we run, we have a 3-hour foundational course where we have people in advance do introspective work. We send surveys out where they do introspective work that they come to the event having gone through. And then we take people through a series of curated questions that they engage with someone they've never met before.
Yep.
And they converse through these series of guided questions. And they come out the other side of a 3-hour session of this feeling like, I am so, wow, what a connection with someone that I've never even met before. I feel closer to this person than I do with people who have been in my life for 5 or 10 or 20 years. That kind of feedback is so heartwarming to me because it lets me know that what we do genuinely impacts people. And they take these skills that we give them right here on the ground out from the weekend with them, able to make connections with people, able to have conversations that they didn't know how to have before. So educational level, I love doing that. And then of course, the one-on-one stuff is very gratifying because people get unstuck.
Yeah. I mean, working with people, I think is a huge privilege. And I feel really humbled that people trust and will come. But I do think that opportunity to speak to somebody that hasn't got that emotional involvement, that you're not trying to say things in a way that doesn't upset them, that you're not trying to balance other people's agenda with your own agenda, that you can, once you're feeling comfortable, that you're able to just take out all of those things that have been going around in your brain and your emotional trunk and unpack them, and then look at them and decide whether they're worth keeping or whether they need something, some further action to deal with them or not. And I would think that, you know, after 3 hours, people come out feeling so much lighter because they're not weighed down by the baggage that's been, you know, it's like dragging a portmanteau, isn't it, with a chain around your neck, your past, unless you deal with it.
Yeah, or it lets you break through the fear that you have of really, we find the self-actualization comes from knowing who you are and then showing up and being able to describe that to someone else.
Yes.
Right? Like getting in touch with who you really are and then having the safety and freedom to just be that person in the presence of someone else, even someone you're just meeting. And like I said, we use these, there is such a thing as TMI. So we teach people not to just show up in new situations and go blip with everything that's true about them, right?
Like I think that's really important because, you know, and ultimately my view is that giving people the tools to recognize themselves and how they need to deal with themselves can mean that then they are able to operate very differently with other people. And instead
letting go of the stories that you were just talking about.
Absolutely. And instead of it being everybody else's responsibility to sort us out, then they're better resourced to be able to take ownership of their own story in a much more resourced way.
Yeah. Just have options, see different ways of being in the world than you could see before.
Absolutely. We're going to go for another short break now. So everybody in life goes through traumas of one sort or another. We've all got stories, just some are more positive and more resourced than others. So this is a really important conversation for everybody. If you want to live a really resourced and happy and successful life, then having a relationship with yourself where you are unstuck is so important. So don't go away.
Travel is part of the American way of life.
When we're on vacation, we keep an eye out for anything that looks out of place.
Miss your bag.
When we travel from city to city, we pay attention to our surroundings.
Everyone plays a role in keeping our community safe.
Whether you're traveling for business or pleasure, be aware of your surroundings. If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Hey. 1 hour pickup order?
Got it.
Thanks. We're out of ink and I have a big meeting today.
And 2 boxes of Twizzlers.
Yeah, for the team.
The team.
Yeah. Team.
Go team.
Go team.
Know what's better than overnight shipping? Free 1 hour pickup when you order online or on our app at Office Depot Office Max.
So, welcome back. So I'm talking to Kat Orme, and we've been talking about self-actualization and being able to become unstuck, being able to move forward. And I'd like to spend just a few minutes in terms of what you see as the importance of having some momentum rather than being stuck in our lives, and how you help people to actually create some momentum within their lives.
That's a really good question. I find momentum comes from clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of what happens when we get bogged down in our stories and our narratives and the feelings that we still have around the stories and the narratives, the challenging feelings, keep us from seeing clearly the next right action. Right? When we can get past the stories and past the feelings and see our lives for how they are right now, we can begin to do the next thing, and that creates momentum. Another another client I worked with came from a terrible background, a terrible trauma that centered in some ways around the dinner table.
Okay.
A lot of ill treatment. I won't, you know, bog anybody down with the details, but suffice to say they were horrible. I've never heard of trauma as challenging as this person had around that. And the way, so I went and spent some time with them, and the way it manifested was they were unable to sit at the table with their family. they would cook and dance around and eat a little bit of food while they were cooking and then serve the family and let the family sit and eat in a kind of a la 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 sort of a way. Like we weren't paying attention to what was happening, right? So as we began to talk about it, one of the things we did was go through the kitchen. There was lots of places where dysfunction was showing up around food preparation, food storage. The source of the trauma was this person's father. So as we went through, we decided to go through the kitchen. Let's go through the cupboards and see how things are organized. Things were cluttered. Things were not organized. And this was a big enough kitchen. There was this counter space was totally bogged down with things. And at one point I went up into one of the far closets and I said, well, what is this dish set? And the dish set was from their father. I said, do you like it? And they said, no. I said, why is it in your house? And there was a look of like, it had never occurred to them.
No, not crossed their mind that they had a choice.
Get rid of it.
Or not.
So we started this just spontaneously. A lot of the work I do comes this way.
Yeah.
Talking about it, I didn't know going into it that this is what was going to be necessary, but we literally took 5 bags of things out of the kitchen to give to Goodwill. The lightness that began to come from knowing that it was okay to let go of things you didn't want to hold on to anymore, but not knowing that's what you were doing, creates space inside yourself to know what the next thing is that you need to do. And this is this thing about, I'm helping you get unstuck, and then the spirit, universe, God, your intuition steps in and shows you what you need to do next, and you get the energy to do it.
Don't you find it interesting how often an artifact, in this case, a set of dishes, keeps the connection to something, that can be really positive. It gives you lovely memories and triggers, you know, this was wonderful, but just as equally, it can be something that holds you stuck in the trauma of what's happened. And I find it quite interesting how initially people are quite loath to recognize the connection and to let it go, because in letting it go, in some ways, we're moving into scary new territory where we haven't got that chain back to that chain holding us back to the past.
And it brings us back to the thing you said earlier about grief manifesting itself in ways other than bereavement.
Yes.
Right. Some of recognizing a connection to something like a set of dishes, while it's a connectedness to negativity in the past, it's also a thin thread of hope that somehow childhood could have been different.
And that you've survived, that, you know, despite the connection to those dishes, I'm still here. The blessed dishes are still here, but I'm still here too.
Right. And so it's just powerful to come to terms with where you really are, understanding what's going on with you, understanding where you come from, understanding where you are stuck.
Yes.
So you have choices. If you want to hold on to the dishes after you've looked at it like that, then great, right? It, like once
you have an active choice.
You have an active choice. Prior to that, you have a set of dishes up in your cupboard that you feel enslaved by.
Yes.
Because you don't realize you have the choice of letting them go.
But going briefly back to the grief conversation we had at the beginning, you know, my mum died 25 years ago. And when my father died, I inherited a lot of the crockery that she collected. I think, you know, it's really interesting how we tend to associate things when in reality, all we need is our memories. Kat, where can people get hold of you?
The easiest place to get hold of me is my website, Kink Collective, K-I-N-K, collective.net.
Lovely. And I'd love to hear your story and hear about how you're doing and what you like on the show and things you'd like more of. So please email me at Gina, G-I-N-A, at Gina Gardiner, G-A-R-D-I-N-E-R, and friends.com. So thanks so much for joining me. Kat, it's been an absolute pleasure and you must come back.
I will be happy to. Thank you so much for having me. And this was a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And please do join me in the next show. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Gina Gardner and Friends, the show that helps you live a happier, more successful, and fulfilling life. To learn more about Gina Gardner, go to genuinely-you.com. If you would like to work with Gina or book her as a speaker, email her at gina@genuinely-you.com.